personal foul. Unsportsmanlike conduct.
Astree tackled the quarterback. He's giving them business down there. That's a 15-yard penalty.
Well, it feels like there's one obvious story to lead with here, Dal, and that is that the Denver Nuggets have won their first ever world championship. And Stan Kroenke, that is the most hated human being on planet Earth back in St. Louis.
I say in St. Louis he is.
Yeah, and ever since he left, he's just... He's collecting trophies, and that entire city wants him dead.
For people who may be casual enough, they're not quite understanding how we're starting this show. So Stan Kroenke is the owner of the Los Angeles Rams, formerly the St. Louis Rams.
They were the cheapest Bears tickets I could get.
And he moved the team. Mm-hmm. So the St. Louisians, is that what you call them?
Yep.
They hate him with a fiery passion.
Yes.
It only gets worse that when after they leave, they win championships, i.e. the Los Angeles Rams won a Super Bowl right after, but he also owns
the Colorado Avalanche, the Denver Nuggets.
And there's also a lacrosse league that all the Colorado people go nuts for,
the Mammoth.
So they always include that, but I'm sorry. No. If you want, fine. But it's not the same as those other. It's not the same,
but it is odd that they also won the championship.
Yes, and he owns them too.
I think you put him on the graphic. So, he also happens to own the Rapids in Denver, the Denver Rapids, the MLS team.
So, yeah, the Colorado / Los Angeles folks love Stan Kroenke. but, yeah, it's, you know what it reminds me of, Aaron, is the whole Cleveland Browns Art Modell situation. And the Cleveland Browns, of course, they're still wandering in the wilderness as far as championships are concerned. And Art Modell decides to move the team to Baltimore. And not only that, he takes... in essence, ended the franchise. All these other teams, when they moved, they took the franchise with them.
Mm-hmm.
Art Modell took the players, took the staff... took the talent, but the Browns were no more. Now they were the Ravens. They were not like the Titans, who formerly were the Oilers. They were the Ravens. Starting up, they had no history. Well,
which is, I've always laughed at that the Cleveland Browns, when they started up their new franchise, purchased the rights to the team history. And it's like, well, I mean, that's adorable or whatever. Here you go. You can say... Oh, yeah, you know what? Jim Brown played for your team in massive quotation marks. But, you know, there's the Ravens who are like, whatever. We sold them the rights to their team. It was still me that did all of that.
Well, not only that, Baltimore's won two Super Bowls since the move.
Even since.
But I'll just say this. I have some experience with the Cleveland people. And they still to this day refer to it as taking a Modell when they have to... do some bathroom business.
And you know what I find equally funny?
They hate him.
Is that they somehow, that purchase somehow convinced the city of Cincinnati to hate the new Cleveland team too. Because that was still supposed to be you guys fired Paul Brown and we're the new Paul, you know, because that whole history
the
thing.
The new Paul Browns.
Paul Brown then founded the Bengals after being fired by the Cleveland Browns, who named their team after him. I'm like, no, that wasn't this Cleveland Browns that fired Paul. You guys should both hate the Ravens, right?
But
that's how it should work. But no, Cincinnati, Cleveland, that's still a thing for some reason, even though it wasn't this Browns that did that.
But you know, that's it reminds me of that situation. That being said, Stan Kroenke, he's doing pretty good. And if the worst thing that happens to him is he just has to avoid flying through St. Louis, I think he can handle that.
That's actually a pretty solid day for most people.
I was going to say.
I didn't have to go into St. Louis.
I was going to say, especially East St. Louis, which is, the Simpsons used to make fun of that all the time. But anyway, so yeah, that's huge for the Nuggets. And here's the weird thing, though. I follow a couple of people.
Do you think Nick Wright would consider Jokic the best player in the world yet? Or how many more of these do you think we're going to... before ESPN acknowledges this?
Who cares what those people think? He grabbed my attention. We had Taylor Kilgore on from the Fox affiliate in Denver on our Friday sports show. and she encouraged us at the beginning of the playoffs, because we're kind of over in jazz country mm-hmm. where we are as far as professional sports are concerned, but it's also kind of free agent country. You can cheer for who you want over here because we don't have any.
There is a way to justify it in any capacity.
Right. But she invited us and encouraged us as a, not just us talking to us, but as our listening group,
mm-hmm.
Our listeners, to give Denver a try. And if they hadn't really watched him much, to watch him. And so I did. I really took that to heart.
Can you believe that our Denver Nuggets won the championship?
I know.
Oh,
I watched. But I'm just saying, I watched more NBA in the postseason than I have watched NBA probably the last five regular seasons combined. I was intrigued by the Nuggets. I wanted to watch it. I was intrigued by the Heat and what they were doing. And then obviously when they got to the finals to play each other, I was kind of intrigued there. But mostly it was Nikola Jokic. That guy, he's like the player you create on your video game when you buy a pro basketball
game.
You're
like, I want this guy to play like me, except he's going to score 40 points.
He's going to be, I remember my guy on my old Sega Dreamcast, going to date myself a little. That was a fun game though. Yeah, he was 7'2". He was 300 pounds. He could handle the ball. He's the best passer. He could dunk it from the free throw line. You know, all his numbers were really exaggerated. I think for the season, I averaged like 50-something points a game. I was Wilt Chamberlain, basically. I was a white, fat Wilt Chamberlain is basically what I was. But Jokic is kind of like that. I mean, some people actually even make fun of his fitness level, which, okay, he's maybe not a washboard shredded kind of guy.
No, hey, we were told by the Denver GM that he is beach ready, baby.
But I'm just saying, you don't play 100 NBA games and win the title and play at that level if you're not in good shape.
No.
That is one of the most brutal, grinding seasons of any in professional sports in terms of your knees, your conditioning, your back, your muscles, the joints. From the waist down, especially, holy cow. It was fun. It was a fun run. I'm glad that they won. I don't really care for Denver fans in general. I grew up hating the Broncos.
I'm still convinced that after hearing a few of your favorite teams, all of them seem like at some point when you would have been a child faced Denver in a championship series at some point. And I'm going, Did Dal form his favorites out of sheer spite?
This is
brilliant.
It kind of is spite, but it's not that. It's spite because I grew up with 2.5 channels
mm-hmm.
Off whatever the gods saw fit to put on our antenna that day. And so when football rolled around, I mean, you only got what the main game was. And if there was no afternoon game, then you didn't get an afternoon game. But you typically did, and it was 90% of the time it was Denver.
Technically, my speculation is slightly off, because you would have been no longer probably just picking your team when the Bulls were beating the Jazz.
Oh, no, but yeah, I had already picked them way before that.
It was just funny to me. I'm like, Dal really hates the popular teams around here, apart from Wyoming, and two of his favorite teams back in the 80s and 90s happened to beat the local teams in professional championships.
I do hate John Elway. And I do hate the Broncos for the most part.
My dad still brings up the joke that he was best friends with a Raiders fan when he was in high school. And said Raiders fan used to crack the John Elway would make a better mascot than quarterback for the Denver Broncos.
Because of his smile, his teeth?
Because of his enormous front teeth.
Yeah. I've heard that one before. Or something similar, if not meaner. But anyway, yeah, so that's kind of part of it. You get sick of him. But you know what? I'm a little surprised. We talked to Taylor Kilgore. Another person we had on our show was Sam Farnsworth. Mm-hmm. Now, Sam has a really interesting perspective. Sam currently works for KSL out of Salt Lake City, so now he's a mm-hmm. jazz guy. And I think that's where they wanted to be. But he and his wife, who's from Star Valley, she's a former collegiate golf coach, Sadie. Peevler was her maiden name, and she would win the long drive contests. That's how good of a golfer over the men. She's awesome. Anyway, but they lived in Denver or in the Northern Colorado area. So Sam worked for the Denver affiliate for years. So he has kind of this different perspective. It's like, yeah, I'm in Utah. We're for the Jazz, but I spent all these years in Denver. And I follow him on Twitter, and he was just kind of pointing out. He's like, man, I'm watching all the Denver people celebrate. And he's like, I would love that for the Jazz crew. And what's interesting is leading up to the championship, there's a lot of different people that I follow who are from Colorado. And they were kind of speculating at the time. Now it's fact, but they were speculating at the time, if Denver were to win this championship, where would it lie within professional sports championships in the Denver historical annals? And I was surprised how low they were ranking it. I mean, they're basically
You're talking about impressiveness or in like how excited people were for it?
In comparison historically to the Super Bowl championships and the Stanley Cups and anything else that's happened in Colorado professional sports history, where did this rank? And almost all the people that I was following were ranking it way behind all of the Super Bowls and all of the Stanley Cups, which is six total.
Yeah.
And then even a couple of things like people saying that the Rockies run to the World Series was more. And I'm just thinking to myself, that's really mean. And I don't get it. What Denver just did, they just beat, I just read it this morning. They faced more players with all-star appearances than any other finals team to win the championship. 85.
And I've been hearing the opposite thing from people already attempting to discredit the run.
I've read this too.
Because of, they didn't face a single top two or top three seed in their
entire... an easy run.
Well, the teams
Celtics.
Well, I'm just saying, the teams that they beat were the teams that knocked out all those teams. So I don't understand.
Exactly.
If you're going to say, well, they ran into the Heat in the finals. Well, the Heat beat the Celtics, so clearly the Heat were a tougher matchup than the Celtics.
And the Heat have been in the finals two of the last 4 years.
Yeah. They beat the Lakers. You guys were about ready to absolutely crown the Lakers if they made this run.
If you go back three or however many weeks before the Nuggets-Lakers series, how many of the talking heads picked the Lakers? A lot of them. After they beat Golden State, there were people already starting to salivate at the idea. LeBron James back to the finals. Wait. They got smoked by a Serbian guy who looks like he plays rec league for his frat house. And I friggin' loved it. Not only that, LeBron James, which some people really don't like. They don't like him. I'm fine with it. I think personally, he's probably an amazing human being. You think of all the things that he's done. But professionally, he's to the point now where he's a fraud. No. Hold on. I'm not saying he's not the all-time leading scorer. I'm not saying that he's not arguably the greatest player of all time. You can go ahead and have those. But.
What is he fraudulent at then?
How many times in that Denver series did you see him flop, fall down, pretend to be hurt, trying to draw a call? I hate that crap.
To be fair, I'm not sure that I actually blame an individual player for that anymore. I think I blame the NBA for that.
Because the NBA.
Because it feels like everyone's doing that now.
You're telling me that LeBron James has to play the game, meaning he has to pretend he has to pretend he got hit upside the head with a pipe wrench.
Now you're talking to a gentleman though that used to routinely, if I saw a ball was overthrown, I'd just throw myself at the DB and hope and pray that a referee misinterpreted it. So
okay, to me there's a difference between gamesmanship and he looked old. He looked old in that series, and he looked like he was out of tricks. Especially the one they're out on the kind of the free throw line, and he like, I don't even know if they even made contact with him, and he falls down, and he ends up stumbling into the front row of the Denver.
You brought this up last week.
Yeah,
with the towel,
and the guy hands him the towel, and they're zoomed in on him, and he knows he should be embarrassed, and he's like, "Thank you for the towel." And I'm just like, even that guy handing the towel is like, "Here's a towel, LeBron. Since you're in such." You know, oh, wow, you just really took a shot like Apollo Creed there. he's a fraud now. He's pretending. He's using his clout to get calls at an all-time level, and I'm ready for him to go away. Go do something else.
I've kind of been annoyed with a lot of superstars that I feel like every time I watch a Bulls game and we're playing a guy who has name recognition, and I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm not as much of a basketball guy, and the one that really bothered me, and I know everyone just loves this guy, but I'm watching Ja Morant play for Memphis.
I love watching it. When he's on, he's one of the most exciting players in the league.
And I'm watching the Bulls take on Memphis, and I'm like, all right, I'm told this guy is just so fun to watch. Let's watch this game. And I don't recall a single moment passing where I wasn't ready to rip my hair out because I'm like, wait, hold on. This is what is the most exciting. Maybe this isn't a routine thing. Maybe he just did this against the Bulls, but it felt like every possession was Memphis get ball, pass to Morant. Morant finds a random Bulls defender to run into, draw a call, take free throws. I'm like, this isn't fun.
Yeah, it's not.
Why am I being hyped up on this? And we play the 76ers. We got Embiid doing it. We play the Hawks. We got Trae Young doing it. Every time we play a superstar, I feel like that superstar, I spend the entire game watching him just picking a red jersey to run into. And then shooting free throws.
I'll say this, though. Of all those players that do that, Giannis Antetokounmpo is the most aggressive. And what I mean is he's old school. So when
it's at least going to be an entertaining foul before those free throws take place.
He runs into a Bulls player, he's at least trying to dunk over him and knock him, step on his chest and dunk. I love Giannis. In fact, and I know you don't like him because he's a Bucks player, blah, blah, blah. Hey, to me, he's my favorite player in the league. But right now, close second is Jokic. They're even making fun of him after he wins because he's so low key in the post game. He's like, now the job is done. Now we can go home.
Yep.
He must have so much joy in his home because he always talks about going home. Anyway, I don't even know if this is true, but Barstool Sports did a tweet yesterday that shows him like looking exasperated. Again, I think it's made up, but I'm not sure. And it says Jokic frustrated when he learns that he has to stay an extra 4 days for the parade before he gets to go home to Serbia. And I'm just like, yeah, I can see him. Oh man, you know, keep dragging this out. I just want to go home. And I'm thinking to myself, you're rich and famous and likable. Someone will fly you back and forth, man. If it's that big a deal. No, you could talk someone into doing that.
I did enjoy, though, you brought up Giannis. I did see a thing ESPN asked, with Jokic's series win, has he passed Dirk for the greatest European player of all time? And someone in the replies said, are we just forgetting that Giannis is European just because he's black?
Yeah,
he's Greek. That a thing?
Well, not only that, how about some longevity?
Yeah.
What Dirk Nowitzki did for a long time. I mean, to me, longevity matters, especially in a sport like basketball. So, no, not yet.
I'm not even here to try to answer that question. I just thought the response was funny, so I brought it
up. Oh, it is funny, yeah. Well, and I've, you know, here's another one if we wanted to stir the pot. You look at the MVPs over the last several years. America has kind of lost the handle on the best players in the world, at least individually.
Hey, we got one this year.
We've still got the team, at least until someone beats us in the Olympics. But I think that's coming. I think the United States is a little bit less focused than they were the last couple of times. And the players are better, continue to get better, these other teams. And it's not just that, oh, okay, now France has Rudy Gobert. You know, it's not like they have one player. Now they're getting two and three players that are potential all-stars. And it's like, oh, this is getting serious.
Yep.
And I just, and you know, these players, like you're playing against Jokic, you're playing against Giannis, you're playing against all these different guys, Rudy Gobert, the French team is good. You better believe that Victor Wembanyama is going to be playing for the French team the next Olympics. So you can have 2 7-footers. One of which that can dribble the ball. Anyway, it's just, I've noticed that. The last three MVPs have been Giannis, Jokic, Embiid, all foreign players.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that interesting. I mean, now you're getting to the point where it's like the best player in the league. has not been an American Jokic, for quite some time now.
Jokic finally doesn't win an MVP.
And he should have.
After getting criticized for being a stat gobbler, I believe it was on ESPN. It was Stephen A. Smith. Oh, he got MVPs because of his numbers, but he's not a real valuable player. That's why his team can't win in the playoffs. Well, they finally take his MVP away, and he said, okay, I guess I better go do the other thing then.
It sort of reminds me of the year Karl Malone won the MVP. And again, deserving. I like Karl Malone. I like the Jazz. I like John Stockton. But it's also one of those, when you go back and watch The Last Dance, it's one of those scenes where Michael Jordan goes, and I took that personally. So I'm going to make sure you don't win the damn title, Carl, because you got my MVP. When they show my trophies for the rest of my life, it's going to show that I have six championships and five MVPs. You screwed it up, Carl. And I get the impression that he was pissed about that. He made up things to be pissed about, so clearly that.
And then Jimmy Fallon went ahead and painted himself up to look like Karl Malone for television, and the rest is history. I don't remember this. Oh, you don't remember Jimmy Fallon?
Did he go blackface?
Full-fledged, bald cap and everything.
What an idiot.
The old...
Do you know one of my favorite...
Karl Malone getting abducted by alien sketch?
I guess I don't remember that at all. You know one of my favorite excuses when people do that is... Well, it used to be okay. No, it didn't. It was never okay. You just did it anyway, and no one called you out on it. It was never okay. I grew up in Fairview, Wyoming. That is one of the most rural places on the planet, especially when I grew up there. And I know that it's never been okay. Come on, people. Pull your head out of your butt.
I remember, what was it? It was a comic book I read as a kid where it was this group of people that lived on an island and they meet a black person for the first time. And people will occasionally use the panel as a meme now, but one of the girls from the island just grabs the guy's arm and goes, "What's going on with your skin?" That's Fairview, Wyoming, little tiny Dal turning on his TV and watching a football game for the first time. And he's like, "What? That Doug Williams guy, what's going on there?"
Now, come on, give me a little credit. But at the same time, this is a true story. This is true. My brothers, mm-hmm. I'm the youngest. So my brothers, the first time they encountered an African-American was like when they were in high school. And they were, and like they would see him, they would play against him on the football field.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember one of them telling me, it's like, yeah, the first time I ever played against a black kid was in Rock Springs. And I was like 16, and the Rock Springs has a train that goes right by the field.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they go by the field, they blow the horn. Now, keep in mind, where I grew up, we didn't even have lights yet. We didn't have night games ever. Well, mm-hmm. they did in Rock Springs. Like, so it's the night game, the lights are on, the train's blowing. And I'm playing this black kid and I've never seen him before. He's like, I was scared to death. Then after a few plays, you're like, oh, okay, here we go. It's fine. But yes, usually that happens hopefully for people like, you know, when they're three. Three or less. But yeah, we're definitely a white area for sure.
But yes.
And even I know that you don't wear blackface.
So Miami... Their last prayer now is a 3-1 comeback against Vegas, but that could be ended tonight. We're not sure yet.
It's over.
Miami got so they're trying to Philadelphia now.
They were lucky to win a game. They were lucky to win that game that they won. Overtime, they stole it. I mean, they were behind the whole match. They tied it and then stole it. You might as well just start planning the parade. Vegas is going to win.
Now, this did already happen in this playoffs.
I know, but I'm just saying, but now, how about, I'm just assuming that they're going to win the cup. And if that should come to pass.
Famous last words.
What a winter spring season for the Mountain Time Zone.
Perhaps.
The Nuggets, the rich creamy nougats.
I'm still not
and the Kniggets.
Still not a massive fan of the Vegas Golden Knights, how it was started and all that. And
I don't either, and I'm still not a big fan of their uniforms. They look like the East German team when I was a kid.
Here's your free, basically the deepest roster in hockey for an expansion team. Here you go. Go ahead and go.
Doesn't that mean that whoever put them together deserves a lot of credit?
Well, no, I'm saying I didn't like the way that the expansion draft took place, where you could only protect whatever it was, 10 players on every round.
Yeah.
So they basically, sure, they didn't get any superstar, except for their goalie, just being handed Marc-Andre Fleury for no reason, because Pittsburgh's stupid.
Well.
But anyhow, basically being handed a team that had, I don't know, 4 second lines on it.
Yeah.
And I went, oh, come on, that's not an expansion team. Don't even have an expansion draft. If it were up to me, every expansion team in every sport would just have to field a team full of free agents and hope for the best for a few years.
That'd be kind of fun.
Like, all right, go find some dudes walking around the Las Vegas Strip that played hockey when they were 10. And
good luck with that.
Every expansion team should have to 76 Buccaneers. That's the rule. You should be forced to go through that.
A five. It's like you're quoting Star Trek, a 5-year mission.
Yes. I don't know if you ever... what was the gentleman's name, the head coach of those first Buccaneers teams?
It was...
great college coach.
Not Weish. Oh, because you're wanting to quote the execution quote, right?
That was great, too. I was talking about his proposal when he got the job, was he handed in a 5-year plan to get the Buccaneers to the playoffs. And when asked about it, decades later, this was in an interview in like the 90s, and they said, yeah, so infamously you had the 5-year plan to get Tampa Bay to the playoffs, and you know, you came through with it. What was kind of the integral details of your 5-year plan? What made you think that 5 years was the magic number? And he straight up told him, he said, well, actually, I pulled the 5-year plan out of my butt because I had a 5-year contract and I didn't want them to have expectations before that. I wanted to get through my whole contract and not get fired.
John McKay,
5-year plan was because he had a 5-year contract. That's what.
Yeah. So he was also famously quoted after a game.
What do you think about the execution of your team?
Yeah, and he said, I'm for it.
I'm all for it.
Yeah. Oh, that's good stuff. Anyway, congratulations to the Nuggets. I think they deserve a little more love.
We can't run and we can't pass.
Other than that,
we're in great shape.
Then maybe some of the fans give them credit for right out of the gate. But hopefully they will come to realize that this is a pretty special run. And they're set up to be pretty good for a long time. So we'll see if they get multiple championships.
Yeah. And we can spend basically an entire episode as well just pulling out old Tampa Bay Buccaneer coach one-liners. Because there was a lot of great ones that I used to watch in NFL films.
The next subject we got to talk about, though, just happened today, Tuesday. The
little mini camp dramas,
yes,
that go on.
The one I want to talk about is the Buffalo Bills.
That's the we'll quickly talk about Chris Jones not showing up in Kansas City. That one's real easy. He wants a new contract.
He's going to get one.
Kansas City said they're open to giving him a new contract. This is basically a formality. He's like, well, my agent tells me I got to sit out so that I can get some leverage. So he is. So whatever. Stephon Diggs is so confusing.
He is confusing.
There is a mess.
He got a new contract.
Here's the details that make this mind-bending. Like, I get it. He's an emotional player. We all saw him freak out on the sideline when the Bills lost to Cincinnati.
He's a diva.
But you had a lot of months to think this through. If that's really, like, if that's what this is about, he's like, well, I don't want to play for the Bills anymore. I don't know if that's it, because surely he would have said something before right now, right? Secondly, he did show up. He checked into his room, and he was out on the field before practice getting in a workout. And then he left before practice started. Then he issues a statement saying, oh, don't worry, I'm in Buffalo. I'll be there every day for minicamp. Well, that's not possible because you weren't there today, and today is one of the days of minicamp.
Well, this is right from ESPN. His agent told Adam Schefter that he is in Buffalo and has been there since Monday morning, that he took his physical, met with McDermott and general manager Brandon Bean in the past 2 days. And as you just said, he said he'll be there for the entirety of the minicamp. Then after practice, it confirmed that he had left before Tuesday's practice. So he's there and he's not. And that's the headline. Diggs says he's there and the Bills say he's not.
And here's the other part, is we're trying to figure out what on earth the motivation is here, because there's a few pieces to this that really muddy the water. First of all, Stephon Diggs reworked his contract this offseason. Yeah,
4-year, $96 million just in the last offseason.
So it's not that he wants a payday, because he did that. But here's the other part, Dal, if you noticed. The reworked part, he turned $22.5 million of his $24 million guaranteed this year into an upfront bonus that he's already been paid. So as far as Buffalo is concerned, if you're talking about, well, maybe he wants a trade. Maybe he wants out of Buffalo. Well, then why would he put that in? Because now Buffalo can't trade him. Because if they trade him, the team that takes him is only taking on $1.5 million. And Buffalo would be hit with $22.5 million in dead cap paying nobody.
And according to this, this same article, yeah, the dead cap hit would be $13.2 million just for this year.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's basically
untradeable. So they're not trading him. Yeah,
so he's untradeable. He might even have a no-trade clause in his contract. He hasn't publicly requested a trade. He just signed a new contract, so this probably isn't money-related.
I think this is my two cents. He is an attention whore. He wants people to understand how much he wants to win, how much he cares. It's not about the money, blah, blah, blah. And so, now, Grant, this is just my guess, because today we're recording this, it's Tuesday. And so Josh Allen comes out, and as I was just joking with you before we came in to record, he drops the F-bomb,
yeah,
opening up his appearance at minicamp with the reporters. He says, I bleeping love Stephon Diggs. He's my brother. I have his back.
I was just talking with a buddy of mine today about what this would mean for the Bills if, in fact, this was something like big, explosive, like Diggs doesn't play for Buffalo this year for any reason, traded, hold out, whatever. Josh Allen is sort of back where he was as a rookie.
Yeah, a little bit.
And Gabe Davis is his number one wide receiver going into 2023.
Or Dawson Knox and the new tight end they just drafted. You could argue that those might be better targets, but
maybe, but at least in the wide receiver room, it's looking dark. I mean, we're talking about what Justin Fields had last year is what Josh Allen would be going into this year with.
I do think that Shakir, the receiver out of Boise that was coming on last year, mm-hmm, he was a steal in the fifth round for the Bills a couple years ago. He's ready to star this year. In fact, fantasy football-wise, he is going to be a steal for someone this year.
The problem is when you take a non-Stephon Diggs Bills receiver, they have a tendency to do that thing that a lot of Steelers and Patriot receivers do over the years, which is when they're not that one guy who's guaranteed at least four catches every week, so you're like, at minimum, I'm getting like 6 points out of this guy. The Gabe Davises and the Isaiah McKenzies and the Shakirs of the world, the reason that they always scare me in fantasy is because they'll get you 50 points in a week, and then the next week some other guy will explode, and that guy will literally not catch a single pass.
That,
and that's what Buffalo does. Well,
and see, that's the thing. Diggs, it's not like Diggs doesn't get attention. He was the second most targeted receiver in the league last year.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of hard to improve on that.
Yeah.
I mean, there's one guy in front of you. No, I don't know who it is, by the way.
It was JJ.
Oh, that's right. So you've got that. I think Stephon Diggs needed a day or two of people kissing his behind,
mm-hmm,
saying how much they love him. Especially someone like Josh Allen to come out and say, I've got your back, you're my brother, we're gonna work this out, it's gonna be fine. Because he even admitted there's things he can do better to improve upon in terms of this situation. But I think he just needs his ego stroked a little bit. And the reason why it's getting more attention is because, well, the offseason has progressed.
I would also like to say that, thinking back on it, a player that I never liked as a kid, because I thought he was a massive diva and an attention hog and this and that, I'm looking back on it, and it was probably just because back in the early 2000s, nobody ever did this, so he stood out. If Terrell Owens played right now, I don't think anyone would bat an eye at any of his antics. And I almost feel like I owe Terrell Owens an apology. Like, you know what? Maybe you did do weird workouts in your driveway, but you also did show up for the Super Bowl on a broken leg. So you know what, Terrell? I'm sorry. Retroactively, I'm going back in time. I now I now undo my disrespect to Owens. I re-respect Terrell Owens because apparently it can get a lot more diva-ish than he ever was.
I'm going to do the exact opposite. I'm going to go back retroactively and say it's his fault that all of these divas have progressively gotten worse.
At least when Owens was doing stuff that was kind of a look-at-me antic, he never actually did fail to show up for the team. Whereas a lot of guys now are, we're in the era of the holdout.
I don't know. Terrell Owens played for a lot of different teams.
He did play for a lot of different teams. A lot of people didn't like the attention and the spotlight that he kind of brought. But he never sat out games or practices or anything like that. He was always at least there. He might have been obnoxious, but heck, at least he's obnoxious in catching 11 passes for me. So
I guess I viewed what's happened so far today as more of a, I actually grew to love Josh Allen even more, if I thought that was possible.
Because Are you still taking him number one overall if Diggs doesn't show up?
Yes, absolutely. Are you kidding? This means he'll run more. but what I'm saying is here he's faced with this situation where probably in his head he's just like, come on, man, just show up. You're my buddy. Let's show up.
But instead,
he's showing his leadership, talking about how he's like, we don't have a game tomorrow. It's like, we don't have a game next week or even next month. It's like, the reason this is getting hype is because, you know, it's mini camp time. And for whatever reason, fans and sports writers, I think we think things are supposed to just naturally progress. And whereas
people are bored too.
I think at the end of a season, if I'm someone like Stephon Diggs, I unplug and I disappear.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes and does other things and probably tries to do what he can to not think about football for a couple weeks at a time. I'm just saying people act like that was the tone of the questions being asked of Josh Allen Tuesday was, you know, how come this is now bleeding over? And I'm just like, what makes you think it should have been resolved by now? That's the exact, I could easily ask that question. I think it's not really a big deal. He's under contract. He's in a good situation. The Bills know they got to have him. He knows the Bills got to have him. They know that their window is still open, but that stick is getting shakier that's holding the window open. There's multiple teams squeezing through that window now, and yeah, you've got to get after it.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, you've got to get out there and keep adding to this team. Not only do you need Stephon Diggs back, obviously in a perfect world, you'd go get Hopkins as well.
Who actually, we're being told the Bills have decided they're not going to schedule a visit with Hopkins.
Right, which
they looked at their cap and they said, you know what? I still feel like as a GM, I'd probably try with it. Even if you're like, hey, listen, all we've got is $8 million. That's well below what you want. But what the heck? I'll try. And if he tells me, you know, screw off, then fine, whatever. What do I lose on that? But no, the Bills said, well, we don't have nearly as much as he wants, so we're not even going to try.
Well, so, we'll see what happens there. But yeah, he's visiting the Titans this week. And if anyone is
desperate for a wide receiver.
But you got to remember, Tannehill's days in Tennessee are numbered.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he wins the starting job again this offseason, he's not going to be there much longer than that.
No, but Hopkins, now we as fans can speculate all we want and say, well, you know, he's hitting that magic 30 number. He didn't play a lot last year. He's had some injury. Maybe, you know, he should go to a contender right now because he's got 1 or 2 years left in him. But we're not the one negotiating for Hopkins. And according to DeAndre Hopkins, he claims he still thinks he has, quote, 5 to 6 years of football left in him.
Maybe he does.
And maybe he does. The Titans just drafted a quarterback. None of us know what Will Levis is going to be. I am not DeAndre Hopkins. I am not DeAndre Hopkins' agent. So, you know what? The Titans might have a great pitch down there. I have no idea. We'll see how it plays out. But all of Hopkins' visits are so odd because he asked specifically during that one interview, they said, well, what do you want? And he goes, I want to go to a contender
with
an established front office, and a quarterback. And then he listed the five quarterbacks he wanted to play with. And thus far, he's taken three visits with three teams that were not on his list.
Yeah, the Texans.
The Texans, the Titans, and the Patriots.
Yeah.
None of these three teams were on your list, DeAndre. Why did you bother giving us a list?
Now, Houston, I can understand because he played there. But that's not the same.
You know
Houston
how
team.
Bad that front office is,
and
DeAndre.
And he knows how bad they're in full rebuild mode. Maybe it's going to be a short one. Maybe it's going to be a long one. But it's a rebuild mode this year. I'm just saying. I guess it depends on how bad he wants to win a championship.
Mm-hmm.
If he's still looking for that one more big giant receiver contract, then yeah, he will sign with one of these other, like the Titans or whoever, that's desperate for a number one receiver. If he wants to win a championship, he will play ball. He'll take a little less.
And of course, you know, when you're a competitive person, like I'm sure Hopkins is, sometimes there's also the element of you don't feel like you have to go to Kansas City to win a championship. There's a bit of an arrogant part of you that thinks, well, you know, obviously Tennessee, this, but if I were there, we can win a championship. There's a lot of guys that are just like that.
Well,
so.
Maybe you can, but you
New England has Bill Belichick, despite the fact that they've been disappointing for a couple of years
here's
without
the thing
Brady.
Here's the thing about, and I'm a big Belichick fan, actually, but I think they're going to be fourth in that division
this year. Be the betting man's smart bet.
I mean, it's still possible that Tua is, you know, gets thrown around like a rag doll again and isn't able to play.
I think they still have Bridgewater under contract.
Yeah, I think the Patriots are really short on playmakers.
Lest we never forget, we saw it happen to Denver last year. Let's not pretend like just because in our brains Aaron Rodgers is such and such that he's just going to go to the Jets and they're just going to suddenly be great.
That's true.
Football doesn't always work like that.
Saw what happened with Russell Wilson. Of course, now all the Denver people are saying, well, you're all going to be eating crow this year. And I'm just like, fool me once, Denver.
Now, I was actually even about to say, to his credit, I thought Russell Wilson at the end of the season played his four best games. Now, that was
They weren't very good, though.
The team was not great. I think Wilson did need some time to click. That could easily happen with the Jets. Aaron Rodgers doesn't just show up and click with everybody and, you know, they start off 6-10 or something and whatever. So it can happen.
To me, another thing, so you got Hopkins out there. Another guy that we've got to talk about in free agency, though, is Dalvin Cook. It's kind of interesting. I grew up in the NFL era of the dominant running back. If you didn't have one, you wanted one and you needed one to be successful. It is completely 180 now. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're to the point now where a guy, he's what, 27? Like he's 27 or 28. He's in the prime.
Four 1,000-yard seasons in a row.
He's got 50-something touchdowns. In other words,
he was on my fantasy team last year.
In other words, old school-wise, he's on pace for a Hall of Fame career, meaning you get 10,000 yards and 100 touchdowns, mm-hmm. you're going to the Hall of Fame. And yet, he doesn't have a job.
I'm hearing strong rumors of Miami.
I've heard that, too.
And Vegas. And I'll tell you right now, Vegas always has these insider things. They always know stuff the rest of us don't know. They're 100% wrong on this one. I can tell you point blank, 100%. Chicago being the number one odds to land Dalvin Cook is wrong. It's
okay.
Incorrect.
So if Dalvin Cook goes to the Bears, what do you owe me?
If we're doing this, though, I want something back when he doesn't.
Well, that means you get to play the whole league and I only get one team? You're the one going out on a limb here.
Okay. Dalvin Cook.
I'm only looking for like a candy bar.
Okay. Sure. Candy bar of your choice if Cook signs with the Bears. He will not. The Bears.
If he doesn't, I will get you a beverage out of the beverage fridge.
Woohoo! Let me explain something to the Vegas bet. I get it. One of our running backs is a rookie. The other one's a journeyman. The other one was a backup last year. Here's the thing, though. Ryan Poles, specifically, likes all three of those guys. And the biggest part is that there's three of them.
And he kind of reminds me of the Joker in The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know what they all have in common? they're cheap.
Yes. And again,
Dalvin Cook's not going to be cheap.
Ryan Poles, you talked about the old school mentality. If you want that feature running back that you can build your offense around, Poles comes from Kansas City, where that has not been what he is definitely, as far as I can tell as a GM, his mindset tends to be more 2023 NFL.
Well, and you could argue that most of the last several championships have been that way.
What you want nowadays, and I don't even like this because I love watching it, and I hate the New York Giants, but watching Saquon Barkley dominate when they would occasionally play teams I hated more than them, I enjoyed watching that, where I'm like, Daniel Jones simply doesn't throw interceptions, and then Saquon Barkley destroys people. That's fun. That reminds me of like when I was a kid watching the Bears. That's not really how teams succeed now, but it's fun. Right now, I think that what teams want is what Kansas City and Philadelphia had last year, which is our rushing game is fresh legs and efficiency.
And plenty of them.
We want three guys that we can rotate in, and none of them will hit 1,000 yards, but they all might have 4.5 yards a carry.
Well,
because they're each only going to take 9 to 10 carries.
And I think Andy Reid really enjoys finding someone, having them come out and dominate it one particular game or something, or do really well. I'm talking about like Pascal for them this last year. I mean, nobody knew who this guy was. And
are
so
you talking about Pacheco?
Pascal, right?
Pascal's a wide receiver for the Colts.
Okay, I'm mixing him up then. Okay, yeah.
Talk about the rookie running back.
Yeah, the running back Pacheco, from like Maryland or Rutgers or wherever he's from.
Yeah.
I think Andy Reid and the front office love when the fans collectively go, who the hell is that guy? And I think they chuckle and rub their hands together like Mr. Burns on The Simpsons and go, excellent. They don't know. They know nothing of what we do. They like to go find those guys that fit in their system that are faster than grease lightning. And the next thing you know, they've got 150 combined yards in a game, and you don't even know where they played college ball.
Yeah,
I think they love finding guys like that.
And that's what I'm saying. Chicago right now, first of all, we're coming off a season where we just broke the all-time NFL record for rushing yards in a season for a team with David Montgomery and Khalil Herbert and Justin Fields adding to that.
Yeah, part of that's the quarterback also rushed for the most ever for a quarterback. Didn't
not
he?
Not the most ever.
Second most?
He got shorted Lamar Jackson by about 60 yards because he didn't play the last week of the season.
He should have.
Yeah.
He was probably owed some million-dollar bonus if he hit that in his contract.
But anyhow, and, you know, we lost David Montgomery, and I like David Montgomery. I think Bears fans are being a little harsh when a player leaves and he's a perfectly nice player, so you'll have to trash him because he's leaving. David Montgomery is a nice guy. He runs hard. He's a good player. Whatever. I like you, David. Please suck for the Lions. Anyhow, we replace him with Deontay Foreman. You know, you watched Deontay Foreman run for the Texans a few years ago. Carolina last year, he had 900-something yards. He had a bunch of touchdowns for him. He's a physical runner. You put him in at the 2-yard line and you just let him run over a linebacker. He's good at that. That's what he'd do. Khalil Herbert, he's the speedster. He's our Cohen type. He's our Darren Sproles. He comes in, he runs hard between the tackles. He's fast. He catches the football. And then we just drafted Roschon Johnson, who has the very odd stat of having ranked in the top 3 for the last 4 years in broken tackles, despite being a backup running back. He was Bijan Robinson's backup at Texas, but still managed to rank top 5 in broken tackles in college football. So, and he can catch the ball. So the Bears are basically just going to bring in 3 running backs, say, this is what we're going to do. He's going to get 10, he's going to get 8, he's going to get 6. They're all going to run. They can all catch the ball too, whatever. That's what we're doing. They're not going to get Dalvin Cook. Miami might.
But it's interesting to me, though, that here you have, so we have Dalvin Cook, who's...
And Saquon Barkley not getting any money.
And Saquon, now, to be fair, at least
Barkley
the Giants...
at least have an injury history.
Well, but at least the Giants offered him $14 million a year this past season, and they rejected it. So now they have to franchise tag him, which I think is going to be about 10.1, which is, you know, I suck at math, but clearly less than $14 million. And so here and his agent are, here he and his agent are saying, well, we're not going to sign that. And so he still has not signed the franchise tag. He's not in minicamp. He's holding out. But it's like what we've been talking about, Aaron. It's this systemic belief on. It is interesting to me because you see it and it keeps rotating from team to team. Because you look at, okay, Bijan Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
He just got picked what?
Seventh
overall, top 10.
Mm-hmm.
Which typically does not happen in today's NFL. Every few years you get a guy, Ezekiel Elliott. Right now it's Bijan Robinson. The Falcons take him, even though they had a low round pick from BYU rush for well over 1,000 yards last year.
And Patterson had a good year.
Yeah. Yeah. Cordarrelle Patterson's a great weapon. But it's interesting to me because these guys go out and they go, oh, that's a steal. Oh my gosh. Look what they're going to do. And I can tell you what's going to happen.
In 5 years, they're not going to pay him?
In 3 or 4 or 5 years, they're going to release him because he's going to be worth X number of dollars. You're not going to want to pay him that.
This actually inspired me.
You're seeing that with Dalvin Cook right now. You're seeing that with Saquon. You're seeing it with these other Ezekiel Elliott.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ezekiel Elliott doesn't have a team. I mean, come on. It's just.
And this is why I went on social media the other day and I kind of ranted about. I said, you know what? In the modern day, if I am a talented football player going into high school or college and they try to put me at running back, I am straight up telling my coaches no. I work on catching the football and tell them you're a wide receiver. Play like Deebo Samuel, because Deebo Samuel has every... He could be an NFL running back. They could have put him at running back, and he can catch the football, so he's a receiver. And I guarantee you he makes more money in his career than Barkley does.
Well,
and Barkley is arguably a much more talented football player.
Yeah.
But he plays running back, so they're not going to pay him because he's got that tag on him. I'm like, you know what? I would just start telling my coach, no, I'm not playing running back. I'm a wide receiver.
It is interesting, though, because I look at, from a Washington standpoint, they have a player like that on their team in Antonio Gibson.
Mm-hmm.
They draft him, and in fact, even when they drafted him, nobody was really quite sure how Washington was going to use him. Is he going to be a running back or a wide receiver? And in the first couple of years, he was basically the running back, even at a 1,000-yard year. Last year, not quite as much because they drafted the Robinson kid out of Alabama. Well, now you got them both. You have an offseason where one of them hasn't gotten shot, which happened last year with Robinson.
A straight-up miracle, that is.
Yeah, and then oh, by the way, Eric Bieniemy is your new offensive coordinator. I'm going to guess that Antonio Gibson is going to be a handful this year because people aren't going to know quite what he is because we don't know what he is. Yeah, being a hybrid, you're a lot more apt to get work than if you're not. So it's interesting to me that the running back market, I mean, and you could argue the last two guys that were picked top 10 as running backs are not going to get paid what they feel they're getting paid. I'm talking about Ezekiel Elliott and Saquon Barkley. And so Bijan Robinson, assuming that you're any good in the NFL, that's your future.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they've got to figure out a new reality. It's like just because I don't even like it. I love running backs. I think they deserve more money, but that's not the way the league goes.
No, and I'll ask you what your stance on this one is, Dal. Let's say Saquon Barkley didn't have his injury history, because I think that's an automatic you can justify what the Giants are doing is, well, we don't know that he'll do what he did last year again. Because he could get hurt at any moment. Let's pretend like that's not the case. Let's pretend Saquon Barkley, what he did last year, you can guarantee that's what he'll be until he turns old. He'll be Frank Gore. He'll play every game. It's going to be great. And the Giants, there are a lot of teams that still would do what the Giants are doing because there's this unspoken rule. Well, you know, we've changed as a league. You don't pay running backs now. It's the rule. You don't do it. Do you suppose that people are too adherent to these rules that they just come up with because that's the league trend instead of... Because to me, honestly, when I look at it, I said no one had a problem paying Tariq Hill.
Yeah,
plays
right.
Wide receiver, gets you similar yards to Barkley. Barkley got more total yards than Hill did.
Christian Kirk got paid more than Saquon's going to make.
And it's because they literally go, well, wide receiver. So yeah. Market says blank. You could just ignore the rules. And just
you
say,
could.
Well, I think Barkley's more valuable to my offense than wide receiver would be,
you know, and
so I'll just pay Barkley.
And it's like I just said, in terms of toil and wear and tear on the body, running backs do deserve more than wide receivers. But
I'm even talking about value here.
But yeah, but
do you think if Barkley guaranteed he plays every game, is he more important to your offense than getting a wide receiver of his general caliber?
I don't know. That's a great question, because you could also make the devil's advocate argument, name a running back that has carried his team to a championship in the last 20 years. So, yeah, you brought up Frank Gore. Frank
Gore. Of course,
Gore,
neither is a wide receiver.
I don't know. Tyreek Hill, you could absolutely make that argument.
Not with Mahomes being... If Tyreek Hill had been on the New York Giants, he's not carrying them to the
I'm just saying his impact was... His impact was bigger with the Chiefs' first Super Bowl win than anything Saquon has done by comparison for the Giants. In terms of win-loss.
I don't think...
What have the Giants done since Saquon Barkley's been there?
But that's the Giants' fault.
But what I'm saying is I can see why...
Like, what if I said Calvin Johnson?
On one hand...
Now it's even.
On one hand, I can see why running backs are upset they don't get paid more. And then in the same breath, you can just look at things and go, I can see why you don't get paid more, because one, there's three guys out there fighting for your job that are just probably almost as good as you, and they're new and shiny, and they have that new player smell.
Here's an underrated one. If he's willing to take a discount, what about Buffalo for Dalvin Cook?
You know,
we keep saying that every time a running back becomes available.
That'd be interesting, since his brother is,
that's
now,
what I'm
set,
saying.
Is now set to be the starting running back for the Bills this season.
Would he take a cheapie to come be a 1-2 punch with his own younger brother?
That's a great question. And would it work? See, that's another thing. On paper, you can suggest what you want. For all we know, you know, his brother, the one that's there now, Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Ben.
James.
Man, I'm terrible at names today. Maybe James goes, this sucks. I finally get my job, and then my brother comes in and takes it from me. This is just like high school all over again.
So maybe not would he take a discount so that he could play with his brother, like a positive.
But maybe it would be a positive. But maybe he doesn't think that way.
Would Dalvin Cook take a discount just to screw with his younger brother because he's an older brother and that's what they do?
Well, but of course there is the idea that maybe they get along great. Maybe they compliment each other. Maybe they would both have 1,000. Think about that. What if they both hit 1,000 yards?
Oh, then your first overall pick's not going to be getting you too many fantasy
points. But what
points.
I'm saying is, as a team, the Bills would be much more formidable.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it would work, maybe it wouldn't. I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But I've brought it up before. Saquon to the Bills makes me kind of excited.
Would you even argue that maybe that's the difference that Buffalo has had over the Chiefs and Bengals these last few years? Where it kind of does feel like Buffalo has been that third team in that running. And a big part of it is Josh Allen is the Bills' offense.
Well, he's their running back.
Whereas I think it's a lot harder to, if you're going to try to beat Mahomes and the Chiefs, it's a lot harder to do it by saying, you know what the heck, let's try to beat them 48-47. Because you let Mahomes really get into a rhythm that way. Cincinnati has had the luxury when they've beaten Kansas City a few times. Burrow isn't really the deep ball gunslinger as often. He's more methodical. But on top of that, they've had running backs to turn around and say, all right, you know what? Mahomes is getting a little hot. Let's keep him on the bench for 8 minutes.
Well, personally, I think...
Josh Allen says, well, I know one mode, and that's score in a minute and a half.
Well,
that's what I do.
I think that's why you're seeing the Bills take a page out of the Chiefs playbook by drafting Dalton Kincaid in the first round. People were already throwing comparisons of him
with Kelce.
As Kelce, for what he does for the Chiefs.
Which helps Allen in the passing game. I'm saying, has Buffalo
been... But it's also an outlet in the red zone.
Mm-hmm.
It's also, oh, we were in the red zone. We'd like to run it. We'd like to score. We'd like to do something other than Josh keeping it and running it in.
I was more focused, though, here on this one. Has Buffalo struggled with ball control in these matchups with these other... Like, we need a running back that we can say, you know what, 6 points is fine. You know what is almost better? I want to kill 7 minutes of that
you
clock.
Know, call me old school. I don't think that's my job. I think it's the defense's job. That's their job, is to keep the other team from scoring. Now, I'm not saying.
But if your defense isn't doing their job, it's nice to have the other option.
I'm just saying, though, if you're an offense that can score in 2 minutes every time, to say that that's the problem.
Not the problem, but is
and
that.
And they aren't.
Is that what the Bengals have had over them when it comes to head-to-head with Mahomes?
I would argue, I think the Bengals have a better receiving core.
They also have that.
And I
but
think
Cincinnati,
Burrow is maybe a little more accurate than Josh Allen. I also think Josh is a little more of a gunslinger, and he's a little more physical.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it gets down inside the 15-yard line, he tends to push the ball in places where sometimes he shouldn't.
I will also point out, you look at New England. We always think of that 07 team and, oh, what could have been the 18-0, yeah. They lose to the Giants. Someone did point out, as I'm bringing it up, you know what that team starkly contrasted with the six Super Bowl teams in? Time of possession. They were almost half the time of possession that the 2004 Patriots had when Brady was throwing to Troy Brown and Deion Branch.
Right.
And they get up and they have a much better offense. No one's going to say they didn't. When they had Randy Moss and Wes Welker and Dante Stallworth, and Brady was at this point in his prime, not a game manager anymore. This was peak Brady. And then the Giants said, well, we've got three running backs, and we've got Eli Manning throwing slant routes. And just as a head, it doesn't make the Giants a better offense than the Patriots. Head to head in the playoffs, it's maybe something that can quiet the pace. So when you're playing the Chiefs, you don't want to try to out Patrick Mahomes because it'll only work like 1 out of 10 times. You kind of want to ice Patrick Mahomes is what I'm saying.
And I get what you're saying, but I also think that may not be the best example, that particular team, because Eli Manning should have been sacked. Eli Manning should have thrown an incomplete pass.
Mm-hmm.
Those were...
And sometimes it's just
play,
wildness.
Exactly. That play, if you're a Patriots fan, is just BS. It shouldn't have happened. He should have been sacked. It should at the very least have been an incomplete pass. The play before that play, New England dropped an interception. It hit him right in the chest.
Well, in the hands.
In the hands. I'm just saying...
There was some luck. But they also did only score 14
points.
No,
you're right. And I think a lot has to do with the Giants' defensive line.
Also true.
The Giants' D-line that year harassed Brady in the Super Bowl.
So I'll go back to my Bengals example then. We'll go to the AFC title game where Cincinnati won. That was the most three and outs the Chiefs had in a game that entire year of 2021 was in that game. And I refuse to believe that has nothing to do with the fact that the Bengals won the time of possession battle, because Mahomes was so accustomed to going, I'm going out there, bang, 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 I'm in a rhythm. All right, 2 minutes, back out, bang, bang, bang. And then suddenly he's just sitting there, and he's sitting there, and he's getting a little cold.
His arms stiffening. I just think you cannot make an entire philosophy around keeping Mahomes on the bench with your offense. I just don't think you can think that way.
Also the fact, man, the Colts have beaten Mahomes for two consecutive seasons
by
Jacoby Brissett handing the ball to Jonathan Taylor, and we're all confused as to
don't
how
bring
this
up his name.
Working.
See, I drafted him first overall last year. What a waste.
Hey, at least he beat the Chiefs for you.
I don't care. Yeah, in like one of the four games that he played. And since he's the first overall pick, I carried his injured butt the whole season. Anyway, I feel like it's just interesting to me that these guys that 15, 20 years ago, they would be absolute gods,
mm-hmm.
in terms of what people talk about them on the sports shows. And right now they are afterthoughts. Ezekiel Elliott, Saquon Barkley, Dalvin Cook. They're all really good at their jobs, but they are in a...
They're not going to get financially
they're not,
compensated
they
for
are,
being very good
well,
at their jobs.
Tyreek Hill is getting $30 million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And Saquon Barkley can't even get half of that.
Mm-mm.
he's offered literally 14.1, I think, from the Giants. And they turned it down because they said that's too low.
As far as who's important to the offense, I would argue that they are basically the same.
Well, I'm just saying touches-wise, Barkley's going to touch it more.
I'd even argue that just because he's on a better team, Hill might be slightly less valuable because Tyreek Hill could get hurt and the Dolphins could still score points. They have Waddle. They have Tua.
But he also tears the lid off that thing.
Saquon Barkley gets hurt and the Giants no longer have an offense because it's Daniel Jones and Sterling Shepard trying to drag.
And that's probably what Saquon Barkley's agent is telling the Giants.
It's like, you have one offensive player.
Not only that. Can you?
Well, now they have Darren Waller.
But not only that, can you imagine? I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of Saquon Barkley. And as I'm watching the Giants pay Daniel Jones, what was his ridiculous contract he just signed?
It was over $40 million a year.
Ridiculous.
Yeah.
He's not worth a tenth of that. And yet Saquon can't get 14? I can see why he's pissed. I really can, because
it'd be one thing if you were an afterthought and Joe Burrow or Josh Allen was your quarterback.
Or maybe you had gone and gotten Aaron Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that. But it's Daniel Jones. I'm sorry, man. That guy is not a very good quarterback. I don't give a crap what he did this last year.
His best season was approximately an average Josh McCown season.
I can't wait to see that fall apart, because now there's going to be another off season of all the NFC East defensive coordinators getting to look and see what Brian Daboll brought. And I'm telling you right now, Daniel Jones is no Josh Allen.
Mm-mm.
He is. I hate the Giants, and I'm excited they signed Daniel Jones for that amount of money. And it's just like. And that's sort of why I'm like, you know what, Saquon, you should leave. You should go to Buffalo. That'd show him. I'm just saying, I would love to see a healthy Saquon Barkley in the backfield for the Bills. Holy crap.
Speaking of Josh Allen, by the way.
He wouldn't even have to move.
He could probably
just keep his house where he's at right now.
He's on the Madden cover this year.
Oh, yeah.
And boy, has this sparked the most irritating form of football fan out onto social media.
I don't understand it.
Let me just point out, our obsession with, as a universal argument, pick any quarterback you want. You want to insult him? You can just instantly go, well, how many Super Bowls does he have? Because there's literally 3 starting quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah.
Maybe 4 if Stafford is back and ready to go, that have won a Super Bowl. And Matt Stafford waited a long time to get it. Aaron Rodgers hasn't won one in 13 years.
Yeah.
Russell Wilson hasn't won one in a decade. Why are we pretending like it's a huge nut? My favorite is there's a new thing now amongst Browns fans. And I don't know when they decided that they were going to be annoying, because they haven't been for most of my life. But for some reason, Cleveland Radio has rallied all the Cleveland Browns fans to start arguing with Bengals fans that Deshaun Watson is the best quarterback in that division.
Yeah, they're wrong.
Deshaun Watson was terrible last year.
Deshaun Watson is a sexual predator who shouldn't even be in the league.
And then here's my favorite. Joe Burrow can't win big games. Enjoy having Choke McGee.
Really?
Joe Burrow... When did the AFC Championship stop being a big game?
Not only that, if not for a phantom holding call.
That didn't happen.
They have already won a Super Bowl.
And if it wasn't, even if that didn't happen, if it wasn't for, you know, his offensive line being atrocious, he's going to throw the game-winning touchdown to Ja'Marr Chase on that fourth
down. You have got to be a special kind of delusional to even be having that argument. Deshaun Watson, as I said, he shouldn't even be in the league.
Let's ignore the moral aspect.
Okay, let's ignore the moral aspect.
He sucks. He's the third best quarterback in that division.
He was worse.
You did not get 2020 Deshaun Watson. I'm sorry,
well,
you didn't.
I don't even know if that guy exists anymore.
No.
Deshaun Watson played for
Cleveland last year was bad.
It's like these people that say, oh, well, if someone would give Colin Kaepernick another chance, he would put up these numbers here. Really? He hasn't played since 2016 I was still married in 2016.
In 2016, he was awful, too.
But I'm saying...
He played a game against my Bears.
Do you know how long ago that was?
Well, yes.
But he just...
He played a game against my Bears his final year in which he had a stat line at halftime in which he was, I believe it was 0 for 11 with 4 interceptions at halftime against the Bears. We were a 3-win team that year.
And again, I'm not even going to go after Colin Kaepernick for all the other things.
No, we're talking Watson here.
But I'm talking from an absence of playing standpoint. He has not appeared in an NFL game in 7 years, 7+ years. Same thing with Deshaun. Maybe he'll be a little better this year than he was last year. In fact, I would expect him to be a little better.
Someone wearing a jersey that said Watson was taking snaps last year, and I'm still not convinced Deshaun Watson played any NFL games.
But here's my point. What if he comes in and he's slightly better and he throws 25 touchdowns and 15 interceptions?
He would still be the third best quarterback in that division.
He would still not even be on the same category as Joe Burrow. Not even close.
And now we're gonna go back to what the original point here was that there was some dude. They were asking, someone was comparing Hurts to Allen, which again, and then if you put Hurts on the cover, someone's asking about, well, why isn't this guy on the cover? Why isn't Patrick Mahomes on the cover for 20 consecutive years, I guess? We're just gonna only put one guy on the cover.
I think the Madden people were so fortunate they got a year off last year. Because Mr. Madden passed away, and they're like, we're putting him on the cover. Woo! Now we don't have to worry about this for a year.
Maybe just go back to putting non-quarterbacks on the cover, because people seem to argue less when you do that. Like, just put Justin Jefferson on the cover, and I bet no one whines about
it. Here's the interesting thing. It's interesting. It matters so much to the players, too, because when they were talking to Josh Allen about it, it's a big deal to him. He grew up playing the game.
I cannot believe that Wyoming now is beating Notre Dame in Madden covers.
That's right. Suck it, Joe Montana.
But
what's funny is these guys grew up playing, and I think that's why they go with these younger, you know, Mahomes and Allen, and you'll probably see Hurts and Burrow. You're probably going to see them. It's because it's that next generation. These next kids that are playing them, they want to be them.
And we keep bringing up the Super Bowl thing, just so we're clear, unless you genuinely believe that Patrick Mahomes is going to win 15 consecutive Super Bowls, look at the NFL, look at who all the best teams are, look at their young quarterbacks, and we're, you know, whining about, oh, Burrow, Allen, Herbert, Lawrence, well, how many Super Bowls do they have? I don't know. Ask me in 15 years or 20 years when they retire. Someone is going to be winning these Super Bowls.
Yeah, and not only that, maybe Mahomes ends up with 7 like Brady. Maybe he ends up with 2. The 2 that he has. Keep in mind.
And he'd still be one of the greatest quarterback careers ever, and we're acting like that's not good enough.
But keep in mind, he was also within probably a couple of inches of being injured to the point where he couldn't play in the postseason.
He was also a holding call away from not winning this Super Bowl.
I'm just saying, he figured it out, but you can't just ignore longevity in the league as well. But I don't understand the whole vitriol of, well, how come they get on the cover and these other guys don't?
I don't know. Straight up, and I think I said this, I went, they could have put in the Jaguars right guard on the cover. Yeah. It would have impacted whether or not I bought the game to the exact same extent, I promise
now,
you.
Now, here's what's funny. I think this was a business decision.
It stirred up some talk.
Well, partially a business decision. So Bills Mafia, people always bring up Bills Mafia and what a interesting group it is, but incredibly generous and incredibly all on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
They were quoting people from Bills Mafia. They were going to buy this game. It's a $60 game.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to buy this game. They don't have a gaming system. They're just going to buy it because Josh Allen's on it and they're Bills fans. And that is going to happen. Now, I don't know if that's already happened, you know, but it's the first I've heard of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first I've heard like, oh, well, I don't play video games, but I'm going to go buy that Madden game because Mahomes is on the cover. Maybe it happened, but I think you're going to see thousands upon thousands of purchases from Bills Mafia of people who don't play video games. Like, look, here he is. He's on the cover. Woohoo. And that's all they care about. And then they'll probably donate the game to like a kid's hospital or something because they don't have it. But they're going to go buy it just to be supportive. It's just, it's a really unique group. I got to be honest with you. I love Bills Mafia. I think they're fantastic.
Now, going back to the Allen one, one of the comments that especially tickled me pink was someone saying, well, why does Josh Allen, why? He said, Josh Allen is so overrated. Why do we keep putting him on stuff? How many playoff wins does he even have? Four?
Got a few.
Yeah, in 4 years? When did that stop being impressive?
Yeah, more than Tony Romo ever had.
How many does Justin Herbert
have?
How
many does Dak Prescott have?
How many does any... It's actually... the guy. It was literally on a post arguing him versus Hurts. It's more than Jalen Hurts has.
Yeah. Well, and if Hurts has another season like they just had, I wouldn't be at all surprised if he was on the cover of next year.
Sure.
Not at all.
You can put anyone on the Madden cover. I don't care if they're even decent. Lest we forget, they put Peyton Hillis on the cover of Madden.
Now, I was going to actually bring this up. This would actually be a good thing to end on. But Peyton Hillis, it kind of is that anomaly of the Madden covers. But look what kind of a stud he turned into. He saved his family from drowning.
Well, he almost daughter, dies. Right?
Well, I think there was two of his kids.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, he may not survive. And then he did. And then there's a story that's come out just this last week. He's like, it's an absolute miracle that none of us are dead from this.
Can you imagine the sheer inner animalistic beasthood that must live within you that you can drown? You are dead. And you manage to get your children back to the surface of the water instead of just sinking to the bottom with them.
It sort of reminds me, I watched a movie over the weekend. I'm not even saying I recommend it because it's kind of out there. It's a Finnish movie called Sisu. And my brother and I wanted to watch it because it looked like it had a Tarantino / Mad Max vibe to it. So we bought it and we watched it. Well, Sisu is a characteristic of someone Scandinavian that does not translate. There's no ready translation for it, but the closest is refusal to die. I think Peyton Hillis has Sisu. He refuses to die.
There is a certain aspect to it of if you're drowning in the ocean versus you're drowning in the ocean and your daughter is hanging from your arm, there's probably something of an instinctual difference
that kicks in. I think there is, but how many times does that still result in everybody dying?
Yeah, and Peyton Hillis simply said,
no.
No.
I'm telling you. You know what? I'm going to try and get him on the show.
Very nice.
I mean, maybe that's like saying, I'm going to get Donald Trump on the show.
Sure. You know?
But he's kind of busy right now. But I think, I would love to talk to him about
this. Sometimes you just reach out to people, Dal.
You never know. I'm going to try it.
We got Logan Wilson to interview with us.
I'm going to try it. He's not playing right now.
I'll just end on this one, I guess, real quick with the last 30 seconds or whatever that we've got. We got USFL in full swing, Dal. Going to talk about this upcoming week because it's very fun to me. If you're going to have spring football and people are already... The people that aren't diehard football addicts like I am are going to inherently not be as drawn to lesser leagues. So if you're going to be a lesser league, you can at least have a really fun finish. How about this one? We're heading into the last week of the season. Technically speaking, all 8 teams are still alive for the playoff race.
Yay, go Generals.
Here's why. Now, Memphis is a long shot because they would have to have the following things happen. They would need to beat Birmingham. They need Houston to beat New Orleans. They then need Michigan to beat Philadelphia. And then, after all those things, they have to make up the point differential tiebreaker on New Orleans. Right now, they are behind in that category by 63 points. So they would need to make up 63 points. They would need to win
plus
by so
all
many.
Plus those other things.
Plus New Orleans lose by so many. So they're essentially gone, but technically alive.
Aaron, I want to know. I mean, and I feel like I'm kind of a nerd. Where does this go? Where are you putting all this information?
I'm glad you asked,
Dale. I used to think as your kid got older and as you got more married, you'd be like, oh, okay, I'm not. No, it's gotten to the, I mean, he memorized the USFL playoff scenario.
So here's where I got all this info, Dal, because I'm hoping to get this gentleman on our show maybe in a few weeks. His name's Jeremiah. He's the Gridiron USFL social media accounts. He works for Newsroom. He's the insider reporter, Newsroom's main insider reporter for all USFL news. And I happen to have known him because both of us are roughly in our 20s and work in this same general field. And of all things, because he's in a group chat I am in on the internet for people that are into anime. And that's how I met this gentleman. So you want to talk about weird ways to work around. But anyway, I believe he was down in Birmingham, and that's where he's stationed from. Gets all this insider info. He posted out all the playoff scenarios. Other than that, in the South, it's a little more complicated. It's more sports-y with how they playoffs are always weird. New Orleans, winning in, simple. Beat Houston, you're in. They can still make it if they lose and Michigan wins because there's the strength of victory tiebreaker. Houston has a stronger range of victories if Philadelphia beats Michigan, and New Orleans has the stronger strength of victories if Michigan beats Philadelphia. So New Orleans can get in by winning or with Michigan winning. Houston gets in by winning and having Philly winning. Birmingham's clinched. They're in. Memphis gets in with all that wildness I mentioned before. They're a long shot. Sorry, Memphis. You know what? If they get in, if they win by 42 points and New Orleans loses by 23 points or whatever, in goes Memphis. Yay, go Memphis. I doubt it. But which also brings up, never mind. Anyhow, the North is a lot more fun. Yeah, I thought of something that I remembered. No, because Houston's done regardless if Philly loses. So anyhow, North, it's a lot simpler, but it's hilarious. Because we just talked about the Renegades and my shirt. I'm not wearing it, but you know.
I still haven't seen it.
Yeah, my shirt came in. That's because I have been wearing it. New Orleans went on that 3-game losing streak. I put it on for their game against whoever that was, to Michigan 2 weeks ago, and New Orleans finally won, snapped their winning streak. So I wore it again this weekend, and New Orleans won again. So right now the Renegades shirt is being used. It is a weekend shirt until New Orleans is done with their playoff
run. It
is a
magic talisman at the moment.
Yes, it's the rally shirt now. But anyhow, they obviously were 4-6 and won. Wouldn't it be hilarious if you got me back with New Jersey sneaking in at 4-6?
I don't know.
Hey, you get a free T-shirt out of it.
All right, well, we'll see.
Anyhow, real simple in the North, Dal. New Jersey plays Pittsburgh. That's Kyler's team, who we did mention. We got to get him on sometime so you guys can have your Jordan LeBron debate. Your two USFL teams are playing this week. Winner goes in. They're one of the seeds. The other game in the North, Michigan-Philly, winner gets in. So essentially, this is now a 4-team playoff that starts this week because the two winners both go to the playoffs. They'll play next week. Winner goes to the championship game.
Well, I'll have to pay more attention to it this week.
Yeah, it'll be fun. I thought that was interesting that the North basically has, they're just starting the playoffs this week.
That's okay.
So, yeah, very fun ending to the USFL season. None of that weird, complicated, except for Memphis. You remember the end of the XFL season with that Seattle St. Louis?
Yeah.
Well, we got to go to these the where do you rank in the points for, and you combine that with where you rank in points. They didn't just do net points.
By the way, did you see how much the XFL lost in their first season?
Yes.
$60 million.
That is, I would say, probably being overblown by people.
Well,
though
I'm sure a lot of that is startup.
What massive businesses? They always say businesses don't turn a profit for 4 years is the average.
And I'm not saying that wasn't expected, but that's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money. It doesn't appear that anyone involved with the XFL has mentioned anything about this being, as you said, unexpected or anything like that. It feels like they all went...
That's one movie for Dwayne Johnson.
Yeah, they're like, you know what? Yeah, we started up a football league with all... As you pointed out, they didn't do the USFL thing. They said we had to pay for all that travel, all the television deals.
You have to buy the equipment. You have to buy the space to play. I mean, they started from scratch.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So, whatever.
But still, That's a lot of damn money.
To us, yes.
To us. To everyone.
Yeah. Unless you're, you know, whatever those three billionaires and Dwayne Johnson were. That
yeah, I guess.
That are like, yeah, well, yeah, of course.
Unless you're Elon Musk and you don't mind dropping $22 billion on Twitter.
Yeah. By the way, did you see the Ottawa Senators just sold for the highest sale value of any NHL team in history?
No,
$1 billion sale.
Aw, they got to feel good about that. $6.05 billion.
Yeah.
For the Commanders.
The NFL, though, is a bit of a different beast than the NHL.
But that sale's supposedly going through here very soon.
And you're very excited about that.
We suck at 30 seconds. It's been 7 minutes since we said that.
No, you just have to think about it the right way.
Okay.
Yeah. Just imagination. Playback speed at 0 or at whatever, 8.0 times.
Hey, I got places to go.
So that'll wrap it up for this week. You can catch us on Spotify, on svinews.com/podcasts, on YouTube, all the wondrous usual spots, Dal.
The listening spots.
We'll see you guys next time.